Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything
paranormal. The views and views expressed by the host and tonight's guests are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Surgeon.
Go flight.
Ecom.
We're go fly.
GNC.
We're go.
Telmu.
Go.
Control.
Go fly.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It has now cleared the tower.
Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back. You're tuned into the best damn alternative talk on the planet, BTE Radio. Sunday nights and BTE Radio. Life doesn't get any better than this. Welcome back to BTE Radio. Get ready, because the sh** is about to get real. Often replicated, never duplicated. We're the real deal, baby. BTE Radio. Mama warned you there'd be shows like this. Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio. If you're not listening, you're just stupid.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Happy Sunday, everybody. It is February the 1st. We are into a brand new month here at BTE Radio, and it's cryptid month. Here on the program, we're going to be looking at all types of cryptids this month. We've got some great guests lined up on the show tonight and for the next couple of weeks, talking all things creature-wise, strange monsters, animals thought to be extinct. If you're looking for cryptids, this is the place to be this month here at BTE Radio. So welcome, everybody, to the program, 8:06 here on the East Coast. And for some of us here in Pennsylvania, especially southwestern Pennsylvania, we're dodging a large winter bullet tonight as the snow has turned to rain here in Gwinnett, Pennsylvania. Our guest co-host tonight on the program, Walt Wadsworth, he's from over in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and he's not so fortunate. Walt, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good, Eric. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful, thanks. Thanks for asking. You are not dodging a snow bullet tonight over there in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, correct?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, I took my dog out a little while ago, and we both came in covered with snow. So, yes, it is coming down out here in Johnstown.
Well, you live in the mountains, so better you than me, buddy.
Yes, I'm up in the mountains, all right. But I'm just outside looking down in the downtown, and you know, usually what dodges you, what Pittsburgh gets, comes my way and picks up steam, so I get the bulk of it.
That you do. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Walt, and your interest in all things cryptid, and why you want to be a guest co-host here at BTE Radio.
Well, I'm a longtime fan of the cryptids and that, and I've always had an interest in them since I was just a little kid. And, you know, especially in the area that I live in, you know, it was just a hotbed of activity back in the late 70s and the early 80s. And it just started to pique my interest. And then later on in life, I mean, it just, you know, really, really, you know, piqued my interest even more. And, you know, just studying the cryptids and that, you know, I love it. It's, you know, kind of a hobby. in that. It's a lot of fun. Why I want to be a guest co-host, I'll tell you what, you couldn't find a better show, you know, that covers, topics like this and, of course, other topics as well.
Well, thank you. That's very kind to say. And we're glad you're with us here tonight. You are number, I believe, 5 of the contestants for the contest to become the new co-host here at BTE Radio. So best of luck to you tonight. And make sure that you ask lots of questions and the people can hear you and hear your delivery and see how you are on the radio. And then they'll vote for whoever they think should be the next co-host at the end of the contest. So good luck tonight, and thanks for being part of the show. We do have a great show in store for everybody this evening. We've got 3 great guests joining us tonight on the program. Alan McGargle, and I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly, Alan McGargle and Jesse Morgan from Fathom Frontiers. They're over in Ohio. And Seth Breedlove from Ohio. They are all involved in a documentary series called Small Town Monsters. And Alan and Jesse are the producers of the film, and Seth is the director. And tonight we're going to be talking about a very fascinating subject that occurred in August of 1978. The creature has been dubbed the Minerva Monster, and the documentary film we'll be talking with them about tonight will be aired at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference on May 16th at the Salt Fork State Park during the event. So we'll be talking about the documentary, Alan and Jesse's research that they've done at Salt Fork State Park, some of their experiences, encounters. They also are involved in a group a lucrative business called Bigfoot Adventures, where they invite the public to come out and spend a weekend with them camping at Salt Fork State Park. So we'll talk with them about that as well. And we'll learn all about the Minerva Monster tonight here at BTE Radio.
Well, I'll tell you what, I say to everybody, buckle your seatbelts, and it's going to be a good show.
Yeah, definitely should be a good show tonight, Walt. Looking forward to having Alan, Jesse, and Seth on the program. And thanks again to Gabe Cole for booking these guests. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, it's real simple to do. You can email Gabriel Cole at btebookings@yahoo.com, btebookings@yahoo.com. And just give her a little background about who you are, what you do, why you want to be on the show, and she'll do her very best to get you a date and set you up to be a guest on the program. So thank you again, Gabe, for booking these 3 gentlemen. I've known Alan and Jesse for a few years now. I've been out on a Bigfoot adventure weekend with them. Spent some time in the woods with them, been at a couple of events with them, good guys. And I have not met Seth yet, so I'm anxious and looking forward to talking with him. So, again, it should be a great program here tonight. Now, a lot of weird stuff going on around the world of the paranormal. We got some skunk ape news we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But before we get into the skunk ape news and the video that was released earlier this week, just a couple of announcements we're going to do real quick, and I'll get through these as quickly as I can because there are some new events that have popped up, some changes to events, some events that I'll be appearing at this spring, summer, and fall, and then we'll go over the guest list for the remainder of February. So real quick, upcoming events for 2015. I've talked about this a couple times on the program, so I'll go over this quickly. The 24th Annual Bigfoot Conference is going to be held at Salt Fork State Park in Cambridge, Ohio on April the 18th. That Saturday in late April, they're going to be restarting the annual Bigfoot Conference out there. The guest speakers include Todd Neese, Diane Stocking Neese, Carl Johnson, and Dr. Jeff Meldrum. There will be a meet and greet with the speakers on Friday night the 17th. Tickets are available and more information can be found at the website annualbigfootconference.weebly.com. I'll spell that for you, weebly.com, annualbigfootconference.weebly.com. The same day in northeastern Pennsylvania, there will be a paranormal roundtable taking place April 18th, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Albertus Area Community Center on West 2nd Street in Albertus. It's a roundtable discussion on ghosts, paranormal, cryptozoology, UFOs, cases of high strangeness in PA. For more information on that, you can go to their website, ufocorp.com. That's ufocorp.com. Butch Witkowski, a good friend of the show, he, Lon Strickler, a few others are putting that event together. So if you're not doing anything in northeastern PA, you want to check out a neat little roundtable, stop by that event in Albertus at the community center there. April 23rd through the 25th in Baltimore, Maryland, OuijaCon is coming your way. Robert Murch, who's one of the leading experts on the Ouija board, has put together a great event. He'll be one of the featured speakers along with Jeff Belanger, Chip Coffey, John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Brandon Hodge, Darkness Radio's Dave Schrader, Karen Dahlman, and Darren Evans. And if you go to your browser, I don't have the link in front of me, but if you just go to your browser and type in OuijaCon 2015, you'll find all that information there. Creature Weekend is coming May 1st through the 3rd at Salt Fork State Park. It's going to feature Nick Redfern, my good buddy, Ken Gerhard, Trapper John Tice from the show Mountain Monsters, and some of the selected cast members from that show will be on hand. More information can be found at creatureweekend.com. Again, creatureweekend.com. Phenomenology, which I've been attending now for the last, five, 6 years, I think it is now. I'm going to be one of the speakers again this year. And they are moving locations. They're no longer going to be in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. They're going to be in York, Pennsylvania, right down the road. So on June 18th through the 21st, you can find Phenomenology 107 at the Holiday Inn Conference Center of York, PA, located on Laux Road. And there's a heck of a guest lineup of speakers going to be attending. You can go to phenomevents.com. That's phenomevents.com. I will be there on hand lecturing about Bigfoot and other strange cryptids, and a lot of great guests on hand. Dave Schrader will be there. John Zaffis and the Zaffis family from Haunted Collector will be there. Our good friend Bill Bean, Chip Coffey, Chris Dedman, Jason Gowan, Stacy Jones. The list just goes on and on and on of some great guests who are going to be at that event. Just announced this past week, Paranormal Supercon will be returning to Erie, Pennsylvania to the Ambassador Center at the Hilton Garden Inn Friday and Saturday of July 24th and 25th. It is an expo filled with lectures, a VIP party, investigations. It's designed to be a fun-filled and educational two-day event with top-notch speakers, featured guests, and featured vendors. Just some of the names that are going to be on hand: Dustin Perry from Ghost Hunters, John Tenney from Ghost Stalkers, I believe the show's called, Chris Dedman, Wanda Kay, yours truly, Eric Altman, will be there, and I'll be on hand speaking about Bigfoot and other cryptids in Pennsylvania. For more information on that, go to ParanormalSupercon.com. Again, ParanormalSupercon.com. And a couple other quick events. Up in Youngsville, PA, at Island Park, Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th, there will be a paranormal fair and craft show taking place at the Island Park. It's going to be presented by a group up there, Warren Paranormal Research Group. They put it together. You can go on Facebook and type in paranormal fair and craft show, and the link for that will pop up. There'll be lectures by psychic mediums. Para X's own Eric Charles from Haunted Buffalo Radio will be there. I'll be there. Our good friend Glenn White will be there. A lot of great people on hand. Don Trainer. So make sure you check that out. The Paranormal Fair and Craft Show taking place in Youngsville, PA. There's also a couple of new events that don't have much detail to them yet, but they're coming your way. A paranormal charity event will take place in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Once we get more details on that, we'll announce that. And then last but not least, the Jamestown Paranormal Convention will take place October 10th. In Jamestown, New York. And again, more details are released on that. We'll be announcing them here at BTE Radio. So the calendar's filling up for me. I'm going to be at the Jamestown Paranormal Convention, the Paranormal Charity Event, the Paranormal Fair and Craft Show, the Paranormal Supercon, Phenomenology, the annual Bigfoot Conference. My calendar book just doesn't stay quiet. So no rest for the wicked, as they say. But those are just some of the events that are coming up. If you want to find out a complete list of events in your area, you can go to the website paranewsinsider.com. Again, paranewsinsider.com, and click on the events tab. There's a whole listing there of upcoming paranormal events. So that's as far as the paranormal events go. And then, upcoming guest on the program, as I said, it's Cryptid Month here at BTE Radio. Tonight's guest on the show, Alan McGargle, Jesse Morgan of Fathom Frontiers, and Seth Breedlove, who is a film director. We'll be talking about the Minerva Monster case from August of 1978. Next week on the show, my nephew will be joining us here at BTE Radio as our next contestant on the guest co-host, or search for a co-host for BTE Radio. He's going to be our guest co-host. His name is Joshua Brinker. And our guest next week on the show is TV star, celebrity, Finding Bigfoot's Cliff Berrickman. He'll be joining us back on the show. So if you're a fan of Finding Bigfoot on the Animal Planet, Cliff will be coming back to BTE Radio to talk about some of the shows, some of his favorite moments on the show, some of the research he's done in the field, and a little bit about Cliff. So it should be an intimate night with Cliff and Josh and I here at BTE Radio. We invite you to join us next week. February 15th, we have cryptozoologist and author Adam Davies joining us on the program. We'll be talking about his research, his trips to Nepal and the Himalayas. Looking for the abominable snowman, or otherwise known as the Yeti. And we'll be talking with him about the Orang Pendek, the Mekele Mbembe, and other great cryptids that he's looked into around the globe. So Adam Davies joins us February the 15th. And then last but not least for the month, February 22nd, it's Ladies' Night here at BTE Radio. Yes, it's Ladies' Night with the Ladies of Bigfoot Research. We have several research investigators joining us on the program. Monica Rollins from the Texas Bigfoot Research Center. Kathy Strain for the AIBR, the Alliance of Independent Bigfoot Researchers. Melissa Hovey from the American Bigfoot Society, and possibly a fourth guest joining us. We're keeping our fingers crossed. Hopefully she'll decide to join us that night. But it's ladies' night. We'll be talking to those ladies about their research, the groups, what they've conducted in the field, and we'll pick their brains. So it's going to be a great month of cryptids here at BTE Radio for the month of February, and hopefully that'll give everybody their fill of strange creatures. I know I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of activity going on. I'll tell you what, when it comes up spring and summer and that, if somebody says there's nothing to do, go out to one of those good events and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, the events should be fun. They always are. I've attended quite a few of them over the years, either lecturing at or just having a table at or making an appearance at, and they are fun. More of a social gathering than anything else. You get to go out and meet some paranormal researchers, talk with them face-to-face, share your experiences, ask them questions, pick their brains. So the events are great. There's going to be a ton of them throughout, like you said, the spring, summer, and fall. There always are. So we'll keep everybody up to date on what's going on.
Yes, I was at I went up to the one up in Clearfield, of course, you know, the one that the PBS held last year up there, and, of course, got to meet you again up there. And I'll tell you what, it was real informative. It was a lot of fun. Met a lot of new people up there. And, of course, I also went to a few other ones. Real interesting, lots of fun. Like I said, if you don't have nothing to do and one of those events is up, go out to it.
Definitely check them out because they're a good time, and you can come out and meet me. What other reason do you need to go to these events? Come out and meet me. But seriously, they are a blast, and we'll be announcing more details as we get them here at BTE Radio. The show Creature Features, I'll throw this out there real quick, that I've been posting on my Facebook page, and we have a radio page for Creature Features with Karen Dolan as the co-host of that show. We are going to get that show eventually off the ground. I've been working with Rob at Live Paranormal, and hopefully going to kick off February 12th, get that show off the ground on Live Paranormal History FM. And been talking with Sharon Day of Ghost Hunting Theories and Paranormal Geeks, and she still is our first guest scheduled for the program. So if everything comes to fruition, if you want to call it that, then Sharon will join us February the 12th, along with Karen Dolan, myself, and Creature Features will kick off officially on Live Paranormal and History FM. And before we get into talking about this interesting news story about the skunk ape down in Florida, I want to send a very happy birthday wish out to my brother-in-law, Chris, from your wife and my sister, Connie, and your kids, Josh and Hunter. happy birthday, Chris. Hope it's going to be a great one. February 6th is your actual birthday, and no, we didn't forget about you. So if you're listening tonight, hope you have a great day and enjoy it, and you know, don't eat too much cake because you got to save me a piece. But that's about all the announcements we got for tonight. Let's talk about this skunk ape footage. I'll read the story real quick and get your thoughts on it there, Walt, and maybe the audience can check out the YouTube video and see what they think. It's pretty interesting. So here's the story, and this came out earlier this week, I want to say Monday of this past week, and it's a third of a series of encounters or happenings in Lettuce Lake Park in Hillsborough County in Florida. And in early January, Lee Spiegel of the Huffington Post wrote an article publishing photographs of a rather static Bigfoot-looking creature half submerged in the waters of a Florida swamp. Now, the story attracted attention of millions of internet users. These pictures, image analysis experts suggested, had most likely been photoshopped in a probable prank attempt. Of course, that story was so popular that it drew interest and attention of the Tampa, Florida mayor, Bob Buckhorn, who commented on the subject. Now, on Monday, another Florida man contacted Cryptozoology News about a sighting that he had in the swamp, and he had apparently taken some video footage in the Hillsborough County Lettuce Lake Park. The guy is just calling himself Matt. He doesn't want to go by anything else other than Matt. He's a resident of the Wamama area, and he disclosed his full name to the website Cryptozoology News, but requested to remain anonymous. And he provided an exclusive video that contains what he reportedly saw on January 25th. Matt goes on to say, "I was canoeing some of the swamps around Lettuce Lake Park and saw what I thought was a bear," the tree service worker said. "I have been here before but did not venture into the little side rivers." Now, the 42-second video shows what looks to be a dark, seemingly bipedal, hominid-like silhouette wading through the swamp as the men on the canoe paddle their way out of the area. "It looked like a bear in color and texture, but it had long swinging arms," said Matt. "I couldn't see the face very well other than it being hair-covered, as we didn't get very close." Now, since the purported creature was in the water, says the videographer, he couldn't estimate its height, but he believes the animal was definitely hefty and that it seemed to be lumbering along. "It moved very quickly through the swamp with ease. I think it noticed us at the end when it walked into deeper water and disappeared. And we paddled up to where it was. We didn't see anything, no sign of it, of course. Now, the water where it disappeared went from about 4 feet deep to about 10 feet deep. The paddle couldn't reach the bottom with my arm fully extended." The Matt goes on to say that he really doesn't know what it was and that he never put much faith in the old skunk ape legends, also known as the swamp ape, the Florida Bigfoot, the Mayaca ape. Of course, the skunk ape is a primate creature reputed to inhabit the Sunshine State. So the video's out. It's compelling, but I'm leaning towards it being a hoax simply because there were two hoaxy-looking pictures that were in stories that were released a couple weeks prior. What do you think about the video, Walt?
Well, I watched it, and I'm kind of leaning towards what you said. I kind of think it might be a hoax, too. Actually, when I looked at it and you see some zoomed-in footage of it, on YouTube video there. At first it appears, when they first see this thing, it looks like it is on all fours. And another still, when I would pause it and I would look at a still, it almost looked like it's trying to, like it was trying to get a drink of water out of the swamp. But if you, like you said, you read any article where they paddled up to where it was, where they last seen it, and they put an oar down in the water and a guy's arm's length, and they figured it to be about 10 feet. And I'm kind of leaning towards possible hoax on this one. To me, too inconclusive, though.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that aspect of things because it is very inconclusive. We'll never figure out if it was truly a swamp ape or a skunk ape or not. But something that I got into a discussion with Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio on Friday night about this on the Monster Watch segment. Dave brought up a very valid point. That swampy area, that lake there, Lettuce Lake, is known to have alligators, cottonmouths, water moccasins, and of course you have the mucky bottom of the swamp there where somebody could get stuck in the mud and not be able to get out and have to be rescued. So why would somebody be that stupid or moronic to put on a costume and go trudging around in the swamp and not be wary of the risks that they're taking by trying to fake a 30 or 40 second video.
Yes, I would agree with you on that one. And like I said, when you look at this, in the video that I watched, you see zoomed in footage. You could first see it on all fours. To me, that reminds me of bear. The only other thing I would say is, you know, is it photoshopped? Is it two videos just put together? You have a canoe rocking in the water and that, and then he's swinging his iPhone back and forth. I'm real skeptical on it, to be honest with you.
I am too. I have to agree. I'm skeptical on it, and especially with the other hoaxes that have taken place there at the park. At the lake within the last couple of weeks, that really leans me towards this being another hoax. But you never can tell. So, as you know, as a researcher, you got to remain open-minded, and you can't rule everything out until you have all the facts. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if anything else comes forward about this one.
Yes, we will. But like I said, everybody just, watch the video for yourself. See what you think of it. I'm inconclusive on it. I lean towards a little bit of a hoax because if it is, in fact, one, something moving through 4 feet of water, that big, that heavy, isn't going to move like that. It's going to have a little bit harder time, and, who knows if you got a muddy bottom to the water.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, if you want to check out the YouTube video, you can go to BigfootEvidence.com. It's, of course, on their page. You'll have to scroll back through a couple of days of posts, or you can just go to YouTube and type in compelling footage of skunk ape / Bigfoot from Lettuce Lake Park, Florida. So if you just type in compelling footage of skunk ape from Florida, it'll pull up the video. You can watch it and make your own decision, make your own judgment on it. That's really all the news and all the time we have for news tonight. I'm eventually hoping that we can get back to doing a paranormal news night here at BTE Radio. We're looking for a new news correspondent, someone to come on and do the news and read it while myself and our future co-hosts kind of banter back and forth about the stories. So something to keep in mind if you want to become a news correspondent here with us. We'll be taking emails and applications in the near future. I'll keep you posted on that. But we had to jump into tonight's show, Walt. We've got some great guests that are going to be joining us here in just a few minutes. Alan McGargle, Jesse Morgan of Fathom Frontiers, and Seth Breedlove, film director. And we're going to be talking about their project that they're working on called Small Town Monsters and the first documentary film they're putting out, The Minerva Monster. In August of 1978, a small town in eastern Ohio was thrust into the spotlight when a local family sighted a monster in the woods behind their home. Over subsequent evenings, they were repeatedly visited by the creature, culminating in a late-night encounter that ended in local police being called in. The story blasted onto the front page of newspapers across the state and into the consciousness of a nation. For weeks on end, news crews and scores of hunters descended on the town of Minerva with one common goal, to find the beast. And tonight we'll be talking with our guests about the Minerva Monster, the film, and their project Small Town Monsters when we come back from the break. I did promise on Facebook today that I'll be giving away a prize tonight on the show, and I always live up to my promises. So, being that it's Cryptid Month here at BTE Radio, what a better way to kick off the month with a book to give away. This is a really cool book that covers and encapsulates a variety of different types of cryptids, monsters, strange beings. It's called The Monster Hunter's Handbook, the ultimate guide to saving mankind from vampires, zombies, hellhounds, and other mythical beasts, written by Ibrahim S. Ammon. That's Ibrahim S. Ammon is the author. The Monster's Handbook. We're going to be giving that away right now here at BTE Radio to the third caller at 1-877-677-2858. Again, toll free 877-677-2858. If you can't get through on that line, try our local number 724-824-1494, 724-824-1494. Third caller gets it once we go to break, so best of luck to you. And what do you say, Walt, we head into our first break of the night?
Sounds good to me, and looking forward to our guests being on. Going to be a good show.
It definitely will. We'll be back, folks. Make sure you keep your radios and your internet right here to the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. You're listening to BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live, and we'll be back after this. Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio. That's short for Beyond the Edge Radio. And we are live here on the ParaX Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. It is February the 1st. It's cryptid month here at BTE Radio. We're going to be talking all things cryptid this month. And tonight we're kicking it off with a strange bipedal hair-covered creature, possibly a Bigfoot. We don't know for sure, but more likely that's what they were seeing back in August of 1978. Our guests tonight are joining us to talk about a documentary film, the first in many, many films to come out under the banner of Small Town Monsters. The creature's name was the Minerva Monster, and that's what we'll be discussing here on the show. Joining us is the director of the film, Seth Breedlove, and from Fathom Frontiers, the producers of the film, Alan and Jesse. Guys, welcome to BTE Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight in the wintry weather that we love so much.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks,
yeah,
Eric.
This is awesome. Thank you, Eric.
We appreciate you being on tonight, and what a great way to kick off the month of cryptids. We're going to be talking about my favorite cryptid, and I'm sure it's your favorite cryptid as well, guys, Bigfoot. And before we jump into talking about the Minerva Monster, Seth, let's find out from you and Jesse and Alan, what got you guys inspired to start a project like Small Town Monsters, to start looking at some of these little stories that kind of escape our attention?
Well, I can take this one. I am a writer, typically, and I had started working on a series of books about small town creature sightings around the country, and the books were going to focus on like four or five different sightings per book. And I actually sent a proposal into a few different publishers and basically couldn't get anyone to bite on it. And then I kind of moved away from it, and I started my podcast, and I was writing for the local newspaper and that sort of stuff. And last summer I had Alan and Jesse on a podcast, and at some point during the recording of it, I mentioned, you know, I saw that Alan and Jesse had this like ridiculous amount of amazing equipment, like camera and audio and this kind of stuff. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to do like kind of a cryptid documentary. And Alan was telling me that that's something he's always wanted to do, and Jesse was wanting to do it. And I told them the idea I'd had for the book, and we started talking about it. And I think at one point they just said, yeah, let's go for it. And I was like, yeah, let's go for it. I mean, this is literally within like 2 hours of us hanging out for the first time. And, by probably 2 months later, we found ourselves out in Minerva tackling this particular project, which was one of the creature sightings that I had really researched for the book. And it was an easy one to research because it's so close to my hometown. I mean, I grew up 15 minutes from Minerva, so I was familiar with the area and everything. So it's such an interesting story. So
yeah, right in your backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. Now, Jesse and Alan, I know you guys have been doing research for a couple of years now, and you have the organization Fathom Frontiers. What was there an interest in the Minerva Monster, you know, that you guys decided to jump on board with this, or is this something you were familiar with? What really kind of inspired you guys to get on board with this whole project?
Well, I think, and, you know, I don't want to – I'll let Alan speak for Alan, but, you know, it's kind of been – it was really his driving idea and driving force to always want to, you know, kind of create these little mini shows when we were doing our videos with Fathom Frontiers. And we always had in the back of our minds that we want to produce some sort of full length, you know, movie or documentary about something. And then as Seth said, we, you know, the perfect, brew or perfect situation happened where we met Seth. And And to backtrack a little bit, I remember he posted on Facebook that that he was going out in the woods with a couple of strangers he met on the internet. I may never see you again. So, but that was, you know, I think it takes a little bit of an extension of faith on, you know, our part and Seth's part to, you know, kind of, you know, meet on some sort of common ground. And then it kind of grew from there as we had that conversation. But, you know, I personally had not heard of the Minerva Monster or that story. And it just, as Seth started to explain more about it and then doing my own little background research, it was just, for me, I'm like, how is this story not, you know, still prevalent, you know, and still floating around in the, you know, in the cryptid circles, or especially in Ohio, and it just seemed to have kind of faded. But yet, there's really this amazing story behind it that it's more than just the possible Bigfoot itself, but the town and the individuals that were involved with it.
Yeah, I'd never heard of the Minerva Monster either until Seth started telling us about it. He said, do you want to make a movie? I said, yes. Well, don't you want to hear what it's about? No, let's make this movie. So I've been kind of learning as we go along. A lot of what I know about the story is now from firsthand accounts from the witnesses we've interviewed, and it's been kind of a neat way to learn about the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating story. It took place in the late 70s, 1978, and Minerva's not a very large town at all.
Right.
I've been through there. I've never stopped and visited anybody. I don't know anybody that lives in Minerva, but it is a small town. What did you guys find out as far as the folks that live there? Were they familiar with the Minerva Monster and the story that was behind it?
You know what? It was weird. We got out there the first weekend we were filming. The Historical Society allowed us to set up and kind of conduct interviews inside the museum there. And in between, you know, bouts of filming, we would go outside and kind of talk to locals. And I think Jesse especially experienced this. For the most part, the average person we met on the street had no clue what we were talking about. I mean, Jesse can talk to that more than I can, actually.
It was, you know, just walking kind of like, pardon me, a man on the street interview. It's just walking down the street. You know, not making the camera obvious, just, you know, hey, have you ever heard about the Minerva Monster? And, you know, easily well over half were just like, what? What are you talking about? I've never heard of that. And, you know, I'm like, you've never heard about the Bigfoot story in the late 70s? And you know, it was a wide age range of people, younger to, you know, people I think that were in their early 70s were a couple of people we had talked to. But it was kind of fascinating in that it was just, you know, other than the few that had heard of it. But, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. When we did find someone that heard about it, they really heard about it. You know, they had a story, a tale to tell, and were more than willing to talk about it. So we kind of had both ends of never heard of it to let me tell you.
Exactly. Yeah, probably once a week, maybe more than that, we'll hear from someone through Facebook or something who has had some sort of story that affects them connected with the Minerva Monster. I just had one today from my mother-in-law's second cousin. She sent me a message on Facebook, and she's like, hey, back in the, you know, 80s or something, she told me she had heard something strange, and then they photographed large footprints right outside of Minerva. So it's this weird thing where people inside the town, especially younger people, don't seem to have any connection to this story at all. But there is a breadth of people that are aware of it and maybe even have had encounters themselves. So it is kind of odd. But it is this almost forgotten history at the same time.
Happen to run across anybody who, you know, when you interviewed them, did they say, you know, hey, you know, I'll tell you my story, I'll tell you what I know, but they didn't want their name involved in it? Did you run across that at all?
I mean, I guess you could say that the family that was involved in the main series of sightings, the Caton family, they're the focus of our movie, I would say. Their involvement in the case was so negative in terms of ridicule and kind of the town's reaction to them coming forward with their sightings back in the 70s that they're not really interested in being on camera and talking about this on camera. We did get an interview with one of them, and we got to shoot around their house, which was an amazing experience to get to be out there. Because to our knowledge, there really aren't any film interviews of anyone in that family aside from maybe possibly a Ripley's Believe It or Not show that focused on the Minerva Monster, but we haven't been able to even turn that up. Howie Caton was on camera talking about the case, and they're just really – it took – hours and hours of convincing to get them interested enough to, you know, to trust us, I guess is what you would say, that we're not out to make them, you know, look like a fool or, you know, to talk about their sighting as if it didn't happen. So they weren't interested initially in coming on camera. It took a lot of work. I can't – anyone else – there were other Caton family members who were uninterested in coming on camera. I can't think of anyone else, though. Maybe Jesse or Alan could speak to that.
No, I don't specifically recall, but working off what you said, Seth, I remember when we went down there after setting up the day, after, you know, you working this situation and getting this interview day finally set up, where we actually got down there and you had got there, I don't know, five, ten minutes before Alan and I, and you walked back out and said, he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And that was pretty astounding that it was all this work. And here we are literally at the front door of the main part of this story. And he doesn't want to do it. But Seth went back in and spoke to him for a few minutes. And, you know, and we answered some more questions and explained to him that there would not be some crazy person running around in a gorilla suit in his backyard.
Oh, yeah. Man, I was hoping.
Now, I have another quick question for you. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you've seen their house. You've seen where it happened. You know, I mean, did you get to see, you know, I guess it's what, a strip mine that was back there behind their house? What did you make of it, of the area in general? Do you think it, you know, personally, you know, that, yes, there was something there, that it could support something like that?
Absolutely, that area could support a large animal, large predatory animal even, and there, you know, I mean, whether this speaks to this case or not is up for debate, but there's definitely been black bear in that area. There's a large deer population, very wooded. Alan can talk about it. Him and I took a plane flight from Salem over to Minerva to shoot aerial footage for the movie, and he can talk about that some. Definitely that terrain is conducive to some sort of large animal. I mean, it's huge patches of woods.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you could, as Seth always says, you could probably walk from Minerva all the way into Pennsylvania and never really leave the woods except maybe to cross a road here and there. Mm-hmm. It was quite an eye-opener when we got up in the air and we were actually flying around that area on the density of some of the woods. And there's lots of water sources there, and it's old strip mining, so it's kind of, you know, layered ground, if you will, kind of hilly, but I definitely think there's possibility of something in there.
Okay, guys, the million-dollar question everybody wants to know. Yeah, well, actually, the $4.95 question I want to know. Do you believe the family was telling the truth?
Yeah, I do. I 100% believe that they are telling the truth, that they saw something unexplained, and I'm actually stealing the sheriff his answer to this question. He 100% believes they saw something unexplainable as well. What that is, I don't know. But there's no, you know, when you're talking to Howie, I was also told the story beginning to end by Rebecca Caton, who's one of the daughters, and she was there as well, and she told me her version of the story. I 100% believe that there was something going on there. And one interesting, you know, note to this too, is that this was an ongoing situation. This wasn't like an overnight, you know, one night they had a run in with an unknown creature. This was, you know, rocks on the roof for months on end and a dead dog and all kind of things. I mean, and then when they saw the creature come to their window, you know, you're talking about a visual sighting, maybe 10 feet away from them through a window. They had a pretty clear sight at this thing, and I 100% believe them.
Yeah, I do too. I believe they saw something, without a doubt. I believe that, and some of their descriptions of it lend me to believe it was not a bear. Mm-hmm. There's descriptions in the film about what it looked like to them, and actually the interesting part is, there's consistency in the description of what this thing looked like from different people that, as far as we know, have never even met each other.
Yes.
So that is pretty amazing to hear. And you'll see, if you've seen on the Facebook page, there's an old sketch from I think it was that was that the Akron Beacon Journal, Seth?
Akron Beacon, yeah.
Yeah. And amazingly, it looks almost cartoonish in the fact that it's kind of stubby legs a little bit in this long hair, but that is, give or take, a drawing consistent with what the description was. It's kind of amazing, actually.
Multiple eyewitnesses, some people not at that scene, some people not in the family, they're all describing the same thing.
Yeah, I believe they saw something as well. And when we interviewed people that had actually been on the scene back in 78 when this happened, they all said the same thing about the family being credible, and that really really convinced me even more that they were not just making some story up.
Yeah, I had done some research prior to the movie last winter, where I drove down there and kind of talked to some of the farmers that lived on the roads back behind the Catons home. And there was one guy in particular who'd gone to school with Howie and a guy named Scott Patterson, who was also there that night back in 78 when the close visual sighting happened. This farmer told me he doesn't personally believe in Bigfoot. He doesn't believe in, you know, this upright, hairy, walking, bipedal creature, but he 100% believed that family wasn't, you know, lying about that sighting. He said to me that there was no way they were lying.
Yeah, they submitted they called the sheriff's department. You know, this is I guess you might say a very typical mid-American family. You know, they go to work every day, you know, and they just want to, you know, for all intents and purposes, just do their thing and, you know, go through their day and not and be left alone. But they did what they thought was the right thing when they were having these issues with whatever this was coming up to their house. And it, you know, that's what was really frustrating to them, is they got this overwhelming attention, and unfortunately a greater portion of it was negative. And mm-hmm. and it's a bummer that it played out that way.
At any time when you interviewed the family, you know, the witnesses and that, did the name Bigfoot surface at all, or did they not refer to it as a Bigfoot?
The name Bigfoot to them was unknown back in 78 is what they told us. Both the guys can talk to this as well. Pretty much everyone we talked to had some other name for it, like some weird kind of Howie referred to it as the old man in the woods or an old hermit, old hairy hermit living up in the woods. One guy we talked to who said he'd seen it called it a witch. For the most part, people that we spoke to, especially the Caton family, was completely unaware of the term Bigfoot. Even in 78, they just weren't aware of it.
Yeah, based on some of the interviews that we did, it sounds like when the Bigfoot hunters or researchers kind of converged on the area, that's when the Bigfoot term really got kind of inserted in there.
Now, I concur.
Good answer. I like that. Now, let's go back to 1978. I don't want to give away too much what's in the film, because I know you want people to watch the movie at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, and they won't purchase the documentary. But if you can, let's go back to 1978. What event happened that kicked this all off? Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. We can talk about that.
Great.
This is all well documented. What we did is we wanted to retell some of this and then kind of explore various angles to the story that might not be, you know, might not have been retold or ever told before. I know some of the sighting witnesses we interviewed outside of the Caton family, no one has heard these stories before. They haven't been filed with anyone. The BFRR doesn't know about them. But I always point people toward Ron Schaffner's BFRO reports. I don't know if they were originally BFRO reports, but they're on the BFRO database. They're great, very succinct retellings of the events that happened. But the event that really kicked off the sighting, that there was one particular evening, which would have been August 21st in 1978, when the family was outside for some sort of family gathering, and this creature came out of the woods and kind of was watching them and eerily watching them. They were feeling, I guess, I don't know that they were feeling threatened, but whatever was going on in their heads, they're seeing this unknown animal. They all retreated inside, and the thing actually came down off the hill from behind their house and walked right up to the kitchen window. And Mrs. Caton grabbed a shotgun, and Howie and Scott Patterson hid under a table, and there were at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have 7 people on the police report, but there were also children there. So I'm thinking 11 or 12 people there saw this thing. It was right at the window, literally put it – I believe Howie actually showed us, kind of put his hands up. The thing actually would have put its hands up on the house and kind of peered in the window at him. And this was the event that made them call the police. But what had actually happened before that was the, I think a week or two before, according to the police report, the Caton family had a German Shepherd. And one night it was going crazy at something. And in the morning they found the dog outside of its collar. It was like it had been yanked out of the collar and its neck was snapped. So that event and this particular event is kind of what set off the police reports, which is what brought in the media, which is what really kicked the whole thing off. Alan and Jesse can both add to that.
Well, I think what really did it was when Mrs. Caton came out with the shotgun and this thing didn't really react to it, they knew it wasn't a person at that point. Because any sane person would have gotten the heck out of there.
Yeah, you would think they'd run up the hill.
Yeah.
When I look in people's windows, typically, and they point a gun at me, I run.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah,
I don't think I'm going to have a shotgun pointed at me either.
That's usually my first reaction. You know, if I'm peeking in on you and you pull a gun, I'm leaving.
Right. I'm keeping my eye on you guys.
You might want to do that, yeah. You're listening to Beyond the Edge Radio live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Our guests tonight are Alan and Jesse from Fathom Frontier, Seth Breedlove, the director of a documentary film that's coming out in May. It's the Minerva Monster, part of a film series of small town monsters. They are our guests tonight here on the program, and we're talking about the Minerva Monster and things that happened in Minerva, Ohio in 1978. Guys, looking back to that time frame, and I'm sure you've done some historical research into the area itself, were you able to find any creature sightings or reports that took place around the Minerva area during that time, or was it strictly isolated to Minerva?
Go ahead, Seth.
Okay, you're talking pre 1978 then?
Well, either pre or around the same time or shortly after. Okay.
All right. In and around Minerva, we have sightings in that area going back to the 50s, which is very interesting. Now some of those sightings could be mistaken black bear. We do know there were black bear in that area. And I always predicate talking about this history with that fact, the fact that there were black bear in the area. But I honestly don't believe that that is what the Catons were seeing back in 1978. There was some sightings actually right across the street from the Caton's house. And of course that area has a long history of sightings because you're not far from like Paris, Ohio, where there's been sightings. I mean, even up till today, there's constantly roadside sightings out in that area. And, I'm trying to think of anything else that's off the top of my head, but I'm blanking here. So one of the other guys can grab this.
No, I don't remember specifics, but I do remember, In the midst of all those interviews, people referencing right in the Minerva area, an area around a train trestle or some train tracks, that there had been footprints and there had been sightings down below. I don't know if someone else can elaborate on that, Alan or Seth, but I do remember that. And that was in the general time frame, the couple years before and maybe even right afterwards. From the Caton's experience.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what you're talking about, but we did have a guy that saw something. I don't know how much I want to get into that because it's kind of a surprise sighting. But we did talk to a guy who saw something 2 miles down the road from the Caton's house 2 weeks before the police report. And the most interesting thing about his description, and we can get into this eventually here, I'm sure, but the Catons constantly reported that this creature, the monster, was seen with 2 other smaller quadrupedal creatures. And this guy that we spoke to had a sighting of something eerily similar without ever having heard about the Caton sightings. When he told us his sighting, it was not that he had heard about the Minerva, you know, the Caton sightings, and he was kind of, at least not to me, it didn't seem like this. It didn't seem like he was echoing something he had heard about. He was giving us a firsthand sighting account that of something that lined up almost perfectly with what the Catons had been experiencing in 78. There were sightings in and around the trailer park, and I think Alan knows more about that too.
About the trailer park?
Yeah, the trailer park sightings.
Actually, I don't.
Well, there, well, I mean,
no, Seth, I was going to say, working off what you said, and I don't want to, you know, give too much away, but this other person that we interviewed talked about his son. You know, they had been going out hunting since he was, you know, a little kid, and his son was 18 or 19, and they had gone out hunting, and this was in, you know, the general area of Minerva. And they had gone out hunting in the morning, and his son went ahead, had gone ahead to go, I don't know if he was setting up the tree stand or just going up to get set up in it, and his dad was still back at the truck, and within a half hour or so, he came running back to the truck, and his dad said he was white as a ghost and said, "I saw something in the woods," and he's like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "What do you mean you saw something?" He's just like, "I saw something in the woods. I don't know what it was. Let's go. I don't want to hunt today." So,
and he quit hunting after that entirely.
Yeah, the kid did, and he was like 18 or 19 at that time, and had been, you know, in the woods, you know, on a regular basis. So that was, I mean, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the trailer park there, the thing that always stands out to me about the trailer park is hearing Rebecca tell me about trailers being hit with rocks thrown from the woods. And an interesting thing about that is I know there's accounts of rock throwing prior to 1978, but this is, to me, this stands out as one of the first ones anyway that I'm aware of where that is a constant repeated action that people are talking about is rock throwing from this hillside, you know, onto the trailer park. There was a couple that were driving along the Lincoln Highway and said they saw this thing. We had someone leave a Facebook comment that back in 76, I want to say, she had seen something along the Lincoln Highway out near Minerva. Like I said, there are a lot of people out there who have stories about someone they know or, you know, a friend of a friend who saw something in the woods out there. So there's definitely a long history.
Well, yeah, and we interviewed a gentleman from East Canton, which is just down the road, and he had a sighting in, 2011? And that'll be part of the movie as well.
Yeah.
Now, same time frame, you know, 1978, you know, when the sightings happened, did you run across anybody or, you know, interview anybody that, you know, or, you know, maybe was seen the thing or wanted to see it or was trying to get proof of it, pictures? You know, did they say, "Hey, you know, I saw a bear out there instead"? Did you run across that at all?
John Nutter is a man's name that I kept coming across. Unfortunately, I was unable to turn up his whereabouts. There's another guy with the same name that lived in the same area who actually runs the Parks Department in Akron, but it's not the same guy. This guy was out in Minerva around that time and claimed to have taken photos of the Minerva monster. And when he went to have them developed, he took them to the Akron Beacon Journal. I think he even sold them the photos. They had them developed, and there was nothing visible on them. A couple weeks later, that whole area, a couple weeks after those stories hit the Akron Beacon Journal and all that, that whole area was just crawling in Bigfoot hunters and people. So you had daily reports of people claiming that they had, you know, seen something in the woods, or they were out there to kill Bigfoot, or they were out there to kill a bear. And that this did seem to be this kind of back and forth between people claiming it was a bear and people claiming it was a Bigfoot. It's interesting because we have conflicting information on whether or not there were bear in the area at the time. I know when I had talked to Ron Schaffner, when I was researching this for the book, he had told me that he had talked to ODNR, and they had told him that there were black bear in that area. In fact, it was a mother and two cubs. But I've found nothing that backs that up. We've heard it from probably two people that say that there were BlackBerry Bear in the area, but to me it almost comes across as a story that the ODNR was just telling people to kind of get, because you got to understand that area was literally crawling with Bigfoot hunters. There were so many guys pulling up in vans with beer and guns and running off into the Catons woods behind their house. There were so many of these people parking along the Lincoln Highway that at one time the Lincoln Highway shut down. It was impassable because people had parked so far out into the road that the road was impassable. So this became a serious problem for the area. So to me, this always read like something that local government was telling people to get them to quit coming out here and messing around, because the police was probably sick of running people off by this point.
Yeah, I remember the sheriff interviewed said that he went out there multiple times, but one of the times during the height of all this, he couldn't get a parking spot anywhere near their house. Like, he couldn't get near their house to show up.
Mm-hmm.
He had to, you know, park down the road to, wow, you know, do his job. And
he's got a hitchhike.
Right.
Well, something else that the sheriff said, speaking to the Black Bear thing, was the fact that there were no markings of a black bear found.
No claw marks or bear
prints. No claw marks. Yeah, nothing. There was no sort of traces of a bear. There were no you know, footprints. There was nothing. It was the sheriff himself told us he didn't think it was a black bear, and we have that on camera. I mean, that's he told us he does not believe it was a black bear, and the same goes for Barbara Galloway, who wrote about it for the Akron Beacon Journal. And we have other people that have told us it wasn't a black bear and that there weren't black bear in the area. It's just every now and then you do come across this story that there were black bear in the area. But I think even the man that had seen something 2 miles from them told us that he believed it was a story that the city was just telling people to kind of get him out of there.
Well, that kind of makes sense. Now, with the Bigfoot hunters coming in, and at first I was thinking Bigfoot researchers, but then I thought about it, and I can see the vans pulling up with all these Ohioans with their shotguns and beer and running around, hey, let's shoot a tree. Mm-hmm. I could see that happening. Were there any legitimate Bigfoot researchers or investigators that were called in to look into the phenomenon?
The first one on the premises that you would know of would be Robert W. Morgan.
Sure.
He was there because at the time he was in Alliance, and he grew up – it's funnily enough, he went to school with my aunt.
Oh.
There's this weird connection there that I had no idea about until this movie started being made, and he posted on my wall and asked me if I knew – if that was my aunt. I said, yeah. And so that's kind of funny. But he was there. Howie actually told us he believed Robert kind of became obsessed with the case. There were other Ron Schaffner was there around this time, and then later on you would have had Don Keating and eventually Matt Moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
So there were big names connected with this case, and it does seem like when people become connected with this property, they get slightly obsessed. Like, they keep coming back and they want to see something there. So I don't know what it is about that property that brings people back. It's like a magnet.
What about you guys? Are you obsessed with it now? Did it have that effect on you?
I rented a tent that I have set up in the woods behind their house, and that's actually where I'm broadcasting from right now.
Sweet.
Yeah, we lurk around their backyard woods as often as we can.
Yeah.
You guys impress me. You impress me.
So you have trail cams set up outside your tent and hoping to get a picture?
Like six of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Six or eight.
My trail cam's actually pointed into my tent, though, so I'm not sure if I'm doing the right thing there.
Just don't share those pictures publicly, and we'll be good.
All right.
Okay. Any evidence collected on the property, around the house, footprints, hair, audio recordings, anything like that?
I've been waiting for you to ask that question, Eric.
Well, you know me. Inquisitive minds.
Now, you know, Alan or Seth, you know, fill in the gaps for me, but the reason that I'm so – that question itself is so interesting because it lends itself to so many of the – I don't – whether it's within, if you will, the Bigfoot researchers community or just you know, general government conspiracy cover-up aspects. I don't want to get into it too much detail, but there were supposedly, you know, there was the picture that ended up being, you know, nothing on the negatives. There was also, I believe they had said there was some hair recovered, and there were also some other physical evidence, which Seth or Alan, you have to help me out with. But the point is that this was supposedly sent off to a couple different universities where now nobody knows where it is, nobody has any record of it, and it just ends with, well, we packaged it up and sent it to here, and now nobody knows where it is. So, Seth, Alan, go ahead and pick that up.
Yeah, Alan, jump in there.
Yeah, I don't know. When we were hiking around there, I know we found a couple deer carcasses that were in there, and you know we're not really sure where those came from. They could have came from anywhere, but that's all I really have is just some of the experiences we had walking around there.
Well, there was a jawbone found, and this is an odd part of the story because we have semi-conflicting information on this. We're told by one party that there was this unidentifiable jawbone found, and then we're later told by the sheriff that the jawbone of a cow was found. So it's either a cow or an unidentifiable jawbone. Either way, they sent it to, like Jesse said, it was sent to Malone University and then promptly lost. So, and there was hair that was found, and then Robert W. Morgan, I believe it was Robert W. Morgan, the information that Howie told us is that a Bigfoot hunter from Alliance found scat that he believed was Bigfoot scat. So that might have been another piece of that. There were a mention of footprints found in the garden behind the house as well, and supposedly there were photos of that taken. There's another bit of evidence that was found possibly. In the police report, there's a mention of photos taken by the police of bite marks on someone. I don't want to get into this part of the story because it's so interesting and I really want to save it for the movie. But there was definitely an incident where someone was possibly bitten by a Bigfoot. And supposedly there were police photos taken. We don't have those photos. Who has those photos? I have no idea. Dealing with the Stark County Police Department in attaining police reports and evidence from 1978 is incredibly difficult. That stuff is locked away and forgotten about, and to dig it out, I don't think it's digitized. I don't think it's – when I went back and forth with the people at the records department at the jail for about 3 days just to attain the police report from 78. So – the odds of coming up with, you know, photographic evidence or anything, unless you're a member of, you know, law enforcement or a lawyer or something like that, is slim to none, at least as far as I've found. But there was definitely evidence there.
Now, any of the deer evidence, you know, deer carcasses that were found, were any of them examined? You know, like, did they notice, like, were any of the bones snapped in the carcasses, or, you know, did they find them hanging from a tree, or were they just on the ground, or...
The ones that Alan and I actually found, and I guess Jesse was there for the one that was a head. Those to me appeared to be at least the half the body ones that we found. Those appeared to be hunter, like remains from hunters. They appeared to be jawbones of a deer. In fact, I think we identified them as jawbones from deer, right, Alan? We like looked it up and.
Yeah, they were definitely jawbones from the deer. They were off the trail, just back up in the woods somewhere.
Yeah, so that was strange. As far as deer kills, like odd deer kills found in that area back then, I'm unaware of any. I do know that, you know, I grew up in Bolivar, which is 15 minutes tops from Minerva. I know back in the 70s, there was a rash of sightings of Bigfoot right behind my hometown, and there were a lot of those strange deer kills. But as far as anything connected with Minerva itself, I'm unaware at this point.
Now, other evidence, any other kind of evidence found? Like, did they find, like maybe, you know, the creature's habitat? Did they find anything like that? Any trails it was using or anything noticeable?
Yeah, there was a pond, actually a quarry pond, not too far from the Caton's house where this thing was seen multiple times. In fact, there was a theory by someone that this thing was actually swimming down into the quarry pond and going into the caves that were at the bottom of the quarry pond. They were finding hair on the surface of the pond all the time. But Barbara Galloway from the Akron Beacon Journal, she's the reporter who covered it, she told us that she found almost what looked like a tunnel carved into the some of the thorn bushes, patches that kind of cover the outside of that trail around the quarry pond. And, I mean, off the top of my head, that's the only thing I can think of that was, you know, kind of a natural marking. Alan and Jesse could probably back me up on that.
Yeah, she said that it looked like it led into an area where maybe something was bedding down at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely a big enough opening for an animal the size of what was being reported at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only other thing that I recall, and this was really a topical right at the moment thing, was the sheriff mentioned when he showed up at their house on the first night he was called out there, that he got out of his car and immediately was hit with some kind of ammonia sort of smell that he said was very peculiar. And and obviously for something that happened in the late 70s, for him to recall that specific part of it, of just getting out of his car, which as a sheriff he had probably done hundreds and hundreds of times on calls, I thought was rather interesting. He remembered that particular piece of information.
Yeah. And that ammonia smell is mentioned throughout the police report, which the police report we have is actually from three separate incidences taking place on August 21st, August 23rd, and August 26th. And all three of them mention an ammonia smell.
We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines for callers tonight at toll-free 877-677-2858. Or if you're local in the tri-state area, you can call locally 724-824-1494. Seth Breedlove is our guest tonight with Alan. I hope I don't butcher your last name, Alan. McGargle?
That's right.
Okay, awesome. Score one for me. And well, Jesse Morgan. And they are with Fathom Frontiers. And we're talking about a film series that they're working on, Small Town Monsters. And the first documentary film to come out is The Minerva Monster, which is the topic of discussion tonight. We've got a couple questions from our chat room listeners. Deb Cash Dollar wants to know, were anybody in the area reporting missing livestock, such as cows?
Good question. I off the top of my head, I've got nothing, though. I can't think of any dead animals in the area. Alan, Jesse, am I an idiot?
No. We didn't catch any wind of any of those reports. The one piece that we didn't do for this movie was talk to someone from ODNR, and especially someone who would have been active in that area at that time. So we don't really have that piece to the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So aside from the couple of bones that were found in the woods and the dead dog that was killed the first night, there was no other animal attacks that you're aware of.
Well, this creature was spotted in and around an old chicken coop, and I'm not sure if there were chickens in it at the time or not. I don't remember off the top of my head if there were or not, but that could certainly be playing a part in this. The other thing that plays into it is that it was seen by the Catons in a strip pit behind their house where they would throw scraps and stuff like that, and it was seen multiple times kind of down in there rummaging around for food. Well, they thought it was rummaging around for food. And then it was seen 2 miles away by that witness that we spoke to recently, who told us he saw it in kind of a compost pit kind of deal doing the same thing, kind of rummaging around. And both of them described that same thing, so I thought that was very interesting.
That is. Second question from Deb, kind of a follow-up question. She wanted to know, have the witnesses maintained the same basic story, or have their stories changed since they first reported this?
It's the same exact story. It's actually eerie to hear, especially Rebecca, and it's a regret for me that we couldn't get her to talk about this on camera, because her retelling of the story was so – I mean, you could tell this is something that really affected her emotionally, and her connection to it isn't just the fact that it was this kind of life-altering thing that happened to their family, but it's very it connects with her because of her mother's involvement, and her mother's gone and things like that. She's passed away. And there's their story, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty much the same now as it was back in 78, with a few, you know, details that are probably just lost to time.
Right.
I think that working off that, it's the, you know, we kind of touched on it earlier, but hearing stories from different people who have, you know, periodically come forward as they've, you know, seen or heard about the project, and whether, you know, little bits and pieces that corroborate, you know, what the Catons have told us or what other people have told us. And that's what's really astounding to me, is that, you know, it's a similar story told by different people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a perfect storm of, you know, evidence gathering.
It's validation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very cool. One last question from the chat room for you guys. This one comes from PSI. He wanted to know, has anyone taken depth impressions in the soil and then compared it to weight needed from that impression? In other words, any of the researchers that were there on site?
Jeez, I got to be honest. Back then, I doubt anyone was doing anything like that. I don't even think – I mean, there was no castings found. I don't think anyone casted the footprints that were found. Right. It's a shame that so much of that evidence that was found in the area back then is gone, because we are going solely off of word of mouth, you know, people's eyewitness testimony and that kind of thing. I can't think of a single bit of, you know, physical evidence that remains.
Interesting. Yeah, it's kind of sad that nobody thought to take footprint mm-hmm. castings. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, and this would kind of logically make sense, if they didn't know what Bigfoot was or weren't familiar with it, how would they know about making castings of tracks?
And not only that, but, I mean, to the Catons, this is just an animal that was behind their house. They actually kind of grew fond of the thing. It didn't just disappear for them in 78. It kind of stuck around, and you know, they told us they still see these footprints. So it's not something that's gone away. And to them, it's just an animal. They're not interested in proving it. They're not interested in casting, you know, so we can have evidence. I especially think they don't want to do that stuff because they don't want, you know, more of the drunken truckloads of people running into the woods behind their
PBR.
House.
They don't want you guys camping on the hill and, you know, sneaking around in the woods at night. So makes sense. All right. Well,
I told Seth that trail cam right in their window was a bad idea, but you know.
Peeking in their window is a bad idea too. So gets you the shotgun in the face. You know how that goes. We're going to go ahead and take our 9:30 break a few minutes early so we can jump right back into this interesting story. Plus, we want to talk about Bigfoot Adventure Weekends and some of the other topics that you guys are going to be focusing on for this project, Small Town Monsters. Our guest tonight, Seth Breedlove, Jesse Morgan, and Alan McGargle. Jesse and Alan are part of a group called Fathom Frontiers, and we're talking about the Minerva Monster tonight, a bipedal creature covered in hair, which very well may have been a Bigfoot, that harassed a family in August of 1978 in the small town of Minerva, Ohio. Folks, things are going to keep rolling after the break. We invite you to keep your internet and your radio dial locked right where it's at, because BTE Radio continues right after this. Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's show. Joining me as a contestant in the search for a new co-host for the program is Walt Wadsworth. Hello, Walt. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Love the show, and good show tonight. Good show. Really enjoy it.
Good. Glad you do. Our guests tonight on the program are working on a project called The Small Town Monsters, and the first series of films that are coming out will be out in May. It'll be debuted at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. The Minerva Monster, we've got the director, Seth Breedlove, and Jesse Morgan, and Alan McGargle from Fathom Frontiers. And guys, thanks for spending your Sunday night with us.
Yeah, oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Awesome.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad you guys were able to join us. And thank you to Gabe Cole, who reached out to you guys and booked you for the show. She is our new booker. And if you want to get on the show, you can email Gabe directly at btebookings@yahoo.com. And she'll work with you to try to get you a date on the program. And make sure you have something worthwhile to talk about, because 2 hours is a long time to sit and talk for 5 minutes. And, you know, so make sure you're a researcher, you have a book, a DVD, something worthwhile talking about, because I don't want to hear about, you know, not having pants during the show.
Sorry, we can talk about that.
A little off-air humor there. But we're having fun tonight talking to the guys. And before we jump into the Kickstarter for helping fund the project, of course, and Bigfoot Adventures, we do have a phone call on the line. So let's go to the caller on the line. Where are you calling from, and what's your name?
Yeah, hi. My name's Cy. I'm calling from New Jersey. Just had two quick questions for Seth. I was wondering if he had ever tried to do some hypnotherapy to try to get some of these witnesses to regress and get information much more clear detail. And the second, if they've ever thought about looking into getting a animal communicator, I know it's a little more out there, but it does work, and have them try to communicate directly with the Bigfoot, preferably in the presence of those people when they think it's around.
The hypnotherapy thing is interesting. I'm not sure. Like, our problem would be, especially with the Catons, would be to walk in there and you know, suggest that we were going to put them under hypnotherapy. I'm about 140% sure that Howie would say no and then probably chase me off the property with a shotgun.
Oh, yeah, we'd probably see the shotgun again, is my guess.
Yeah. We might even get to see the actual shotgun from 1978, though. So if we could get that on camera, it might be worth it. But, yeah, it's not – I just don't – it's something like that, especially when you're doing a film project. If I was a researcher who was out there, you know, trying to actively – you know, like a Bigfoot researcher is what I'm saying, not an investigative journalist or whatever you want to call me, idiot. I for me, it's just not something that would probably work for a project like this. As far as the animal communicator, I think – honestly, I think that they've had people like that out there. In fact – I seem to recall Rebecca telling me on the phone that they had someone come out there who played some sort of instrument, not like a flute, but like a pan or something. I mean, they were playing something into the woods trying to communicate with this thing. But, you know, the other thing is that, the Catons don't really want people on their property looking for Bigfoot.
Sure.
They let us – they were unbelievably kind, especially to Alan and I, and let us one night go up into the woods behind their house with some thermal equipment and night vision and look around, but they're just not interested in people being on their property looking for this thing. Well,
I have another suggestion that may help you, especially for your documentary.
Okay.
Why not spring for it and pay for it and get them a little plaster cast thing, show them how it's done, make an impression in some soft soil, and say, you guys live here 24/7. If you do see the Bigfoot or see signs of it, here's your plaster, you know, mold thing. Go out there, pour it in there, give us a call, and we'll come right out there and we'll get it. This will give you evidence that you need, which will really spice up the documentary.
Yeah, it would have been great. Again, like, just for the family, they're just not interested in the evidence. They you know what they told us? They told us they know they're there and they don't care what anyone else thinks anymore. It's just how – I mean, Alan can back me up on that because they were adamant about that.
I totally believe you.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that would have been great, you know.
Yeah.
To have something to, you know, show, here's a pastor, a cast that the family found, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if I had thought they'd go for it, I would have handed them a camera and been like, here, you know, take some shots next time you see him wandering around. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, Seth, good job with all that. Eric, thank you very much for letting me call.
My pleasure.
And, talk to you guys all later. All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for calling inside.
Thank you.
All right, Walt, you had a question?
Oh, yeah. Out of all the witnesses you guys interviewed, who do you think was the most visibly shaken up and affected by this? And, I mean, just how shaken up and affected were they from what happened?
It's interesting. As far as, like, an emotional response, I think the guy that we interviewed about a week ago, his name's Scott, I think he's probably the most still emotionally affected by it. You could still see the kind of the fear in his.
He was only like 8 years old when that happened, so I think that really, really affected him.
He told us he still has nightmares about it. He told us he's an avid hunter. He said there's mornings. I don't know if he told us this on camera, but he told me. He said there's mornings where he pulls up, to go hunting. He'll pull up in his truck and it's dark still, and he can't get out of the truck. He'll sit there until it gets light out before he gets out of the truck. So I think for, Scott, as far as their life was impacted, I mean, it's got to be Howie Caton. He told us, the last 2 years of high school for him were a nightmare because of everything that happened. And it doesn't necessarily stem from the monster behind his house, but from the ridicule and the crazy circus that kind of surrounded them as soon as they came out with their sighting.
No, that's interesting that you say, him being a hunter like that, and, he gets out there, it's still dark out, and he just wants to sit in his truck, until it gets light out,
mm-hmm.
And, being where I live at, I've encountered, Bigfoot a few times myself around where I live at, and, there was even a couple times where me and my nephew would go, and we would just still stay sitting in the vehicle. Because, you just get that feeling that, something was around there.
Yeah.
And we just kind of would wait and, until it would get a little light out. I don't blame him at all for doing something like that because, when you run across something like that, it does visibly affect you. And
mm-hmm.
You are affected by it for a long time. I can definitely see, his point with that.
Well, you guys, the movie sounds phenomenal. It sounds like it's going to be a great film, and I know you're debuting it in May at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, and I imagine at that time people will be able to order a copy of the DVD if it's out.
They can actually order a copy, Eric, right this minute they want to.
Sweet.
They can visit the Kickstarter, which is, I think it's Minerva-monster- DVD pre-orders or something like that. Ridiculous. You'll probably just have to search it or visit our Facebook page to look for information. But if you go to the Kickstarter, you can actually pre-order the DVDs through the Kickstarter. The other option there would be the Grassman Gear website, which is grassmangear.com. And Alan and Jesse can talk a little bit more about that. But the Kickstarter, which you mentioned earlier, is set up specifically to help fund the production of the DVDs. And we actually have already reached our goal, but we're going to keep going with it, obviously. And the more support we get with it, the more awesome, rewards are going to be available. And there's already some really cool stuff in there. There's like a Minerva Monster hoodie and an amazing poster illustrated by my buddy Jeff Coonsey. And I've already been told, which is unbelievable, but I've been told by a couple of people that is one of their favorite movie posters. And it's nice. Really kind of an iconic illustration that he did, and we kind of gave him this thought that we wanted something that looked like a 1970s horror movie poster, because this all took place in the 70s. We kind of wanted that vibe. But you can get one of those posters through the Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter is rolling today. So anytime between now and March 3rd, you can get on there and pre-order those DVDs, and Alan and Jesse can talk about how to actually purchase through Grassman Gear.
No, we've got it set up on grassmangear.com. There's a link right on the front page, and it's a pre-order, just like you would do on Kickstarter, and you still will get, the acknowledgement for helping us out and help make this happen in the movie itself. And, we set that up in case... give us another avenue to get it out there, definitely. But also, if someone just doesn't want to deal with Kickstarter and signing up and just going through that whole process, you can just go right through grassmangear.com. Use your credit card or use PayPal. It's simple, straightforward, and you'll still get the recognition c- because you're supporting us, just like as if you were ordering through Kickstarter.
Yeah, and the movie should be out. The hope is to have it available at the conference. That's where we're pushing for that.
Very good.
Now, do you have a trailer out for the movie already made? Is it available up on YouTube to watch, or do you have a website we can view the movie trailer on yet?
Yeah, we're steering everyone to that Facebook.com/MinervaMonster. If you search it on Facebook, it's under Small Town Monsters. The trailer is on YouTube at our YouTube channel, which is Small Town Monsters, I believe, on YouTube. Alan can fill me in there if I'm
wrong.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, and the trailer is on there. We've had a really positive feedback to that trailer. And it doesn't tell too much. We kind of want to keep this thing close to the vest because it's a documentary for one thing. So we want to and some of the information we've gotten in these interviews is pretty awesome. So we didn't fill a lot of those details in the trailer, but we hope it entices people still to watch the movie. But definitely visit that Facebook page. That's where we're updating constantly.
It looks good. I've seen the trailer, and I'm going to get a copy of the movie for myself. So
awesome.
Looking forward
awesome.
To it. Now, Small Town Monsters is the name of the project which these small films fall underneath, the Minerva Monster, of course. What's your next film you're going to be working on?
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Good question. I mean, we're talking about it. I'll say names bandied about Momo, the Ooh. Loveland Frog,
nice.
The Monroeville Monster. There's a few. But Big Muddy Monster is one I absolutely love, the story behind the Big Muddy Monster.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah. So there's a lot. You know, one of the easiest things here is that we can – I'm unaware of any other project where a documentary or a television show or whatever goes to one specific place and that's all they investigate. And they are retelling the stories, and it's kind of – I think this is something that people have wanted to see for a long time. I know every time I hear people talking about Finding Bigfoot, they say they love the town hall meetings, right? And this is kind of like a long town hall meeting. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's retellings of amazing events and kind of filling in the blanks for people. It's an investigative journalism approach to talking about Bigfoot or whatever cryptid we're investigating.
Yeah, we've got no reenactments and there's no narration. It's just the people that lived it are actually the ones that are going to be telling the story. It's a really unique way of doing it. It's been challenging to put it together that way, but I think in the end it's going to be something that's really unique and really needed in this genre.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's for me, one of the cool parts is some of these people are sharing stories that they haven't told for years, and some of them haven't told their stories for over 20 years yet. You know, through Seth and his ability to connect with people and has helped bring that, you know, bring them out of their shell, if you will. And that really is one of the driving forces, you know, behind it is the, you know, tapping into that emotion that comes through that we think really comes through in this. And that's what really, you know, kind of drives the story as it mm-hmm. goes through the whole documentary.
Yeah,
most of the people we talked to had never spoken publicly about it. There's a few that have, but most of them haven't said anything publicly about this.
I think that's what's going to make the film very interesting and intriguing to watch, is to hear these personal retellings of their experiences without a narrator or without outside interference, just to have them tell you exactly what they experienced and what happened. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we only have about 10 minutes left in the program, so I'd like to kind of switch gears if we could. And let's talk a little bit about Fathom Frontiers and Bigfoot Adventure Weekends. I know that's coming up in the summer. And talk a little bit about the research that you guys have done in the field, Alan and Jesse. Let's start first with Fathom Frontiers. Tell us about your organization, what it does, and what you hope to accomplish.
Yeah. Well, Fathom Frontiers, I guess... what we do is kind of in the name, and it's about, you know, being willing to push forward into the unknown and move past maybe your apprehensions, your fears, and really go at what you want to go at, trying to find the information you want to find. Your, you know, follow through on your investigations, and I think I should back up, and Alan, of course, you know, tell me if I'm fill me in where I miss, but
I sure will.
I'm
just waiting.
Oh yeah, I know. But Alan and I have known each other since we were kids, and despite, you know, life and everything that goes along with that, we've always had this underlying theme of wanting to research the unknown, and an opportunity presented itself. And one of the first times we actually, I guess you could say with a purpose, went out to look for Bigfoot or evidence of, was in upstate New York, near Whitehall, an area that has a, you know, has a classic history of sightings and events that have happened there. And that was about 6 or 7 years ago. And I think that really set it off for us. And ever since then, we've just tried to grow and improve what we do when we're out in the field. And I know we'll talk about Bigfoot Adventure Weekends, but we also wanted to be able to find a conduit to, you know, for people that might be considering it or just interested in the Bigfoot community, you know, a way for them to get into it.
Very cool. It sounds like you guys bring some experience to the film, of course, and with Fathom Frontiers, and to Bigfoot Adventure Weekends, which is something that kicked off, I believe it was 4 years ago when this all started.
Yeah, it's been about 4 years. It's kind of turned into an event that we it's not for the Bigfooter, the Bigfoot researcher, Bigfoot hunter. It's geared for families, people that have, you know, kind of dreamed about it or joked about, you know, maybe it would be fun to go do that. This is a chance for them to really go out and experience it. It's 4 days and three nights. We've been having it at Salt Fork the last four years now. And camping is included, and it's primitive camping, and all the food and the meals are included. And we have some workshops that Eric was kind enough to help us out with a couple years ago now, the footprint casting and various other things. And we do night operations where people, you know, normal, regular family-type people can play with thermal cameras and night vision equipment. And we've got a parabolic microphone that we built, and we take all this stuff out and give people a real adventure. The name of it is really fitting to what it is.
Now, do you have a website for the Bigfoot Adventure Weekend?
Yeah, that's BigfootAdventureWeekends.com. This year we have June 18th through the 21st set aside at Salt Fork State Park. We limit this event to about 25 people because we like to give a personal experience. Every year it's a little different. We really go out of our way to make sure that everybody gets out of it what they expect to get out of it. So we do keep it small. I would recommend anybody interested to get to go to BigfootAdventureWeekends.com and register soon.
Yeah, and definitely it's on Facebook as well, Bigfoot Adventure Weekends. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can contact through the website or just, you know, send us a message right on Facebook. That's fine. It's grown. We've worked to make it better every year, and it's really just a good time. And if anybody's listening that hasn't had the opportunity to go out Bigfooting or let alone be out in the woods at night, this is the perfect opportunity to do it. We've had people literally that had never been camping before were taking their tent out of the box for the first time, and they were out there to do this. So, you know, hey, we'll help you set up your tent as long as you're willing to, you know, head out with us in the middle of the night out in the woods. So we want you to come out and have a good time.
We have all different levels of experienced people. I mean, we have some hikes that would be easy enough for children to do and some more advanced hikes for adults that really want a more thrilling adventure. We try to accommodate, you know, the people that come the best we can.
Well, I do have to tip my hat to you guys because I did attend, I believe it was the second one that you both and Sharon Lee put together and organized, and I had a good time doing it. I'm, as you probably noticed, I'm kind of a loner when it comes to Bigfoot research. I like to just get out in the woods, and that's where I spend most of my time. But I did enjoy the weekend. I'm pretty sure from my attending and viewing everybody and watching everybody that was there had a blast, Everybody seemed to really hit it off, and a lot of good camaraderie going on there, and some great hikes. So we had some interesting activity one of the nights we went out at one of the cemeteries out there, and it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. So BigfootAdventureWeekends.com is the website, and get on board with that for a great time with Alan and Jesse. Seth, will you be going out there with them?
I am unsure yet.
Your answer is yes.
I'm scared that Jesse is trying to lure me out there for a reason. I don't know what it is, but I have a feeling I might not come back.
Well, those game cameras in the tent should have given it away. But
exactly.
I'm going to teach you how to survive in the woods with only a toothpick and some floss.
And no pants.
And no pants. Nice.
TMI. Now, the Bigfoot Adventure Weekend, and that, you know, it sounds like a good experience in that, you know, from what Eric said, what you guys described. Do you plan on taking it out of state anytime soon?
We would like to expand on it. We don't have anything planned at the moment. We've had some discussions about maybe expanding this year, but we've been very busy putting this movie together, so we need to get back to those discussions, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what, Pennsylvania is a pretty good place to start. We're right next door to you.
Yeah, we hear that loud and clear. I think that would be great. We would love to do that.
Yeah, that's actually – we have had, you know, casual conversations about it, you know, expanding it, throwing the idea around. Pennsylvania is easily always included in that conversation. We used to go camping there when I was a kid, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful state, beautiful woods.
Well, should you decide to come over here, I'll tell you where to go. And that was that wasn't meant as a joke either.
Oh, okay.
I thought this was some territorial dispute we had.
Damn it, I'll tell you where to go.
Just try coming over here. I'll tell you where
Cross
to go.
Cross the state line, I dare you.
Yeah, on a serious side, if you came to Pennsylvania, if you got around my neck of the woods, you know, I know a good section of state game lands, you know, that they do offer camping up there. They already have lean-to shelter set up there. And, you know, personally, I've actually had, you know, several Bigfoot encounters up there myself. So might be a start for you.
Awesome. Sounds very good, yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we have about a minute left in the program. Can you give us website links and how to find out more information about the Minerva Monster, Small Town Monsters, and you guys?
Facebook.com/MinervaMonster for the updates on that, and then the Kickstarter campaign at Kickstarter.com.
Very good. And Fathom Frontiers?
You find us on Facebook, Fathom Frontiers. Make sure you check out Grass Van Gear on Facebook as well. It's another opportunity to purchase the Small Town of the Monsters movie. And also, as we just got done talking about, Bigfoot Adventure Weekends. You can find us on Facebook or BigfootAdventureWeekends.com.
Very cool. Our guest tonight on the show is Seth Breedlove, director of the new documentary short film coming out, first of part of a long series of small town monster movies, The Minerva Monster, and joining him, the producers of the film and members of Fathom Frontiers, Jesse Morgan and Alan McGargle. Guys, thanks for coming on the show tonight, spending your Sunday evening with us. It's been a blast, and hopefully you enjoyed your time here at BTE Radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best of luck with the movie. I know it's going to be a huge success for you guys, and best of luck with Bigfoot Adventure Weekends. And if I can help out in any way to either promote or help, you know, anything going on you guys need help with, just give me a holler. I'm more than happy to.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
And don't forget the Minerva Monster premiere will be May 16th after the Bigfoot Conference at Salt Fork State Park. Don't miss that.
There you go. All right, guys, thanks for stopping by tonight on the show and sharing your new project and story with us. We appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of your Sunday night.
Thanks, Eric.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome. Take care, guys.
Hey, you guys. Have a good night.
Thanks, all right.
Man. All right, folks. What a great show here at BTE Radio with Jesse, Alan, and Seth joining us to talk about the Minerva Monster. It's a story that's fascinated me. I've never really looked into the story much, Walt, but a great story nonetheless. It's got some great things that have happened to that family, in my opinion, great things. I'm sure the family disagrees, but interesting things that have happened over there. I know a lot of very well-known researchers have looked into the case over the years, and these guys, Jesse and Alan and Seth, have put out a documentary film. I can't wait to see it. I want to see what this all encompasses and entails.
I tell you what, I'm looking forward to it, Nat. I watched a trailer already on YouTube.
You know, they gave out the website address you could watch it on. I've seen it. I find it very interesting in that, and, you know, I'm actually looking forward to it myself, and sounds like it's going to be a good documentary movie.
It definitely does. Definitely does. And it'll debut at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference on May 16th, so check that out. Looking ahead on the show to next week's program, my nephew will be joining us. He applied to be one of the co-hosts, so he's entered the contest, and he'll be joining us. Josh Brinker will be on the show February the 8th as the co-host of the program. And joining us, our special guest, returning to the show, he's home from filming. He's got about a week to unwind and relax, and he's graciously agreed to spend one of those nights with us. Cliff Berrickman from Finding Bigfoot will be back on the program. I talked to Cliff by phone, maybe about 2 weeks ago, and he did confirm, and really looking forward to talking to Cliff. We're going to pick his brain about some of the recent seasons of Finding Bigfoot, and just recently, a matter of fact, last Sunday night, they were showing the Pennsylvania episode as the season finale, so I want to talk to him and get his thoughts about what he thought about Pennsylvania and the areas they investigated, and it should be a fun program next week, so make sure everybody, you mark that on your calendars, that Cliff will be joining us from Finding Bigfoot here on the show. Walt, I know you were at the Finding Bigfoot filming of the town hall. What were your thoughts on that?
I'll tell you what, it was an interesting town hall. I found you know, some of the people, very credible in that. It was a lot of fun. I can definitely say that. It was a lot of fun. If they ever get around into your state, you know, where they're going to be, you get to the town hall, do it. It is a lot of fun. You know, like I said, I found it informative. Okay, so that's my opinion of it.
I enjoyed it. It was a good time. Good time. And hey, you got to see my ugly mug on camera for a few seconds. I got my 15 seconds of fame. Now I'm big-headed and, you know, have an ego, and I'm going to strut my stuff around like a peacock. So.
Actually, I don't even know if I got to see myself on it, because unfortunately, the night that that was on, I had to work, so I'm kind of like working and glancing at my cell phone while I'm watching it, so I don't know if I got to see myself on there or even just a glance at myself on there, but oh well, if I did, I did. If not, it's no big deal, but I still had fun going there.
Yeah, so, me too. Me too. Well, we're out of time, my friend. I want to thank you for coming on and being a contestant in the search for the new co-host for BTE Radio. You did a great job, and I'll definitely keep you posted as to how the contest runs when it's all said and done. The listeners will have their say as to who they liked the best, and we'll let them know. And as always, as I make this offer to all the guest co-hosts who filled in, if we ever need a co-host last minute or a fill-in replacement, I'll give you a call and see if you're interested. So thanks for stopping by, Walt. We really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, too. And anybody wants, I'm on Facebook. Look me up. Of course, everybody knows my last name and ad on there. Look me up on there. Send me a friend request. Me, myself, I'll be at Sci-Fi Valley Con, Blair County Convention Center, Altoona. You'll see me running around in costume. So enjoy.
All right. Well, folks, you have been listening to Beyond the Edge Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Thanks again to our special guests joining us on the show, Alan, Jesse, and Seth. Great job on the program tonight. Another fun show. Thank you, Walt, for dropping by and sharing your Sunday night with us. And we're heading out the door to make way for the next program here at the Para-X Radio Network. You guys have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch you again next Sunday night, 8 p.m. start time. Until then, take care, everybody, and have a great night.
For listening to Beyond the Edge Radio. Tune in live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Para-X Radio Network and Planet Paranormal. You can find tonight's show along with all our archive shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Podbean, Blueberry, Parapods, Planet Paranormal, and the Para-X Radio Network. You can find all these links and more on our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Music used on tonight's show was done so with permission of Midnight Syndicate. Visit their website at midnightsyndicate.com. Got feedback, questions, comments? We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on BTE Radio. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on Planet Paranormal and the Para-X Radio Networks.